Chapter 25, The Power of Decision, The Gift of Living in a Beautiful State. How to truly create and experience an extraordinary quality of life. If we look at how our lives have turned out, both what we love and what we're not happy with, there are many ways we can view, evaluate, or justify our experience. We often give ourselves credit for all the good things that have happened, but all are quick to blame others for the injustices and the bad things and the things that don't match our expectations. In order to do that, we have to ignore the evidence that people's lives are not based on what's been done to them. In fact, biography is not destiny. All you have to do is spend a little time reading autobiographies of some of the most extraordinary human beings in history, world leaders, scientific genius, sociologists, business people. And what you'll discover is that often people who are given everything, all the love, support, education, and money, can often find themselves going in and out of rehab most of their life, and those whose life seems to have hit the hardest, who went through the most injustice, physically, mentally, emotionally, often develop a hunger to break through the limits of their past. They don't settle for a life lived in reaction to what's been done to them or what they failed to achieve. Instead, they find a way to use whatever life has given them to move forward and not only grow personally, but as they grow and develop, they use the internal strength, skills, and insights to help others along the path. Extraordinary people like Oprah or Nelson Mandela or Viktor Frankl, who against all odds created life on their terms. What's the difference? I'd submit to you that it's not our conditions, but our decisions that determine the quality of our lives. If we want to know why we are where we are in our lives, look back on our decisions. If I asked you, can you think of any decision that you've made in the past 5 or 10 years or even more that if you look back on it, if you made a different decision, your life would be completely different? Of course you can. Sometimes the decisions were tough, or you had to get beyond your fear or take a big risk. Other times it may have been a small decision that led to something important, like where to go to school, and then you meet the love of your life there, or you pick a certain profession which led you to a whole new direction, or to living in a different part of the country or the world. The gift of extreme stress. Quote, if you're going through hell, keep going. Winston Churchill. The illusion that many of us have is that some people are just luckier than others, and they don't really have the big challenges that we've faced. But having had the privilege to work with tens of millions of people from 195 countries at my events and privately coaching some of the most successful leaders in business, politics, sports, and finance, from moms and dads to the most challenged people in our society, I can tell you, there's one common denominator in all our lives. In spite of people's beliefs, no matter how smart, attractive, or successful in business or financial terms you are, no matter how good a person you are, everyone will experience extreme stress at some point in their lives, probably more than once. No one escapes it. Aren't you glad you listened to this positive chapter? But it's true. The illusion is that we have that some people don't go through extreme challenges or we're the only ones who experience injustice, and it's just an egocentric lie. In fact, no matter how much we don't want it to happen, we're going to lose a family member or a relationship that we treasure. We're going to lose a job, or the government's going to do something that shuts your business down, as was the case with COVID. You're going to get robbed, or your house might burn down or be struck by a natural disaster. Somebody in your family might be diagnosed with a terminal illness, and if they are, maybe there'll be answers in this book that can turn it around, as others have done. I'm speaking to you from experience. I've been told I have a tumor in my brain and I could die. Early in my career, I was on the verge of bankruptcy. Somehow I managed to pull it through and not go bankrupt. I've ended long relationships, had the pain of bearing 3 fathers and a mother. I've had homes burned down and lost things that I thought were irreplaceable. Of course, nothing's irreplaceable except your soul and your ability to use whatever life brings you to still create a beautiful life. Extreme stress is going to be a given in your life, at least at some point. So the real key to have an extraordinary quality of life, in other words, life on your terms, is not to hope you get lucky and nothing happens, but to develop the kind of psychological and emotional strength that makes you resilient enough so that whatever happens in your life, somehow you use it to become something more. If you can accept that extreme stress is going to happen, then the real key is, what are you going to decide to do with it when it hits? As we said at the top of the chapter, Winston Churchill famously said, if you're going through hell, keep going. If you do, I can tell you from experience, having gone through extreme stress so many times, there are 3 invaluable lessons that only extreme pain seems to be able to teach, and only if you don't give up. If you push through those times of extreme stress, you'll discover, 1, you're stronger than you think you are. 2, You'll discover who your real friends and family are because the fake ones disappear when the going gets rough. An invaluable lesson. And 3, pushing through pain will build in you a psychological and emotional immunity. Having been through the most stressful times, all the normal challenges and problems of life will seem like nothing by contrast. You'll become more, so you can live more fully regardless of what's happening in the external world. In other words, you'll learn to use stress, not let stress use you. So, what's a problem? I would suggest that our biggest problem is that we think we're not supposed to have any. Think about it. What's a problem anyway? It's all relative. Say you left your work and you're in bumper-to-bumper traffic and you're late getting home. How do most people respond? They get really stressed. They can't control the traffic and they're focused on what they can't control. They're focused on what's missing or what they're supposed to be on time for, and they think this is a problem and their emotions may boil. But what happens if suddenly the car overheats and you can't restart it and you're stuck in the middle of the freeway? You got to find a way to get your car off to the shoulder or people keep honking at you. Now that's a problem. Now you've got to pull your cell phone out to call for help and there's no cell service. So you have to walk a mile to the next off-ramp to get to a gas station to find a phone. So you're walking along and you trip and break your ankle. Now is the traffic a problem? Is the overheated car a problem? No. So you call a car service when you get to the gas station. They take you to the hospital where you get an x-ray and a cast. And then you listen to a message on your phone, and there's a message from the love of your life who says, "I'm leaving you," end quote. Now, is the traffic a problem? Is your overheated car a problem? Is your ankle a problem? No. You finally make it home and find a message from your doctor saying he needs to discuss your MRI with you. You call and find out you have cancer. Is the traffic a problem? Is your overheated car a problem? Or is your broken ankle a problem? Is your relationship a problem? No. So here's the challenge in life. Our, quote, problems amount to anything different than what we expect. It's all perspective, isn't it? Some are bigger than others, but problems are healthy signs of life. They're challenges for us to grow mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. We can't get rid of them, but we can become stronger, smarter, and better in dealing with them. We must learn to discipline our disappointment. Some people let disappointment destroy them, while others let it drive them. That's a choice. Whenever people say they're suffering, or when I start to feel overly stressed myself over something or make it life and death in my mind, I try to remind myself that suffering, again, is not in the facts. It's in my perception of those facts. For example, if you're incredibly sad or depressed because your mother's died, of course that would be a natural reaction. But if you're staying depressed a year later, you're not sad or depressed because your mother died. You're sad because you believe she shouldn't have died. Remember, it's not the fact that she died. It's your perception of the fact that's creating your suffering. As we discussed, we're meaning makers. That's what we do as humans. We can decide what to focus on, what things mean, and what we're going to do as a result. But if we don't do this consciously, our survival brains will take over and we'll find ourselves stuck in a pattern of frustration, anger, or fear instead of breaking through and finding a way to grow. And we all need to grow, not just for ourselves, but so that we can be a vessel of love and strength for those who we care about most. 2 master skills for an extraordinary quality of life. So how do we create an extraordinary quality of life? There are 2 worlds we need to master, as we've already discussed, the external world and the internal world. I call this the science of achievement and the art of fulfillment. Those are the 2 master lessons. The science of achievement is how to turn your dreams into reality. And while that's not the subject of this book, that's what I've spent most of my life teaching people through my books, events, and private coaching. But the second skill I would attest to you is even more important, and that's mastering the art of fulfillment. Notice I didn't say the science of fulfillment, because fulfillment's an art. What fulfills one person is totally different than what will fulfill another. Some people can look at a piece of art that looks like a colored square on a wall, a red square, and pay $50 million for it. Someone else thinks they're insane and finds joy in a sunset or in their child's smile. Obviously, the easier it is to be filled, the more fulfilled you can be. But there's a secret beyond just your personal style, and that's understanding a lesson that I got from a brilliant man in India one day. To suffer or not to suffer, that is the question. Let me tell you a quick story of what changed my own life. I'm always looking to grow personally, so I'm constantly exploring different ideas about how to reach a whole new level. A couple of years ago, I was in India visiting a dear friend of mine, Krishnaji, who's equally fascinated by these questions about how to achieve an extraordinary quality of life and help others do the same. As my friend knows, I've taught for many years that if you want an extraordinary life, you need to live in an extraordinary mental and emotional state. I talk about how being in a peak state creates peak performance. If you keep yourself in a high energy or energy rich state, you'll deal with problems so much easier and find the solution so much more quickly. And you're also more enjoyable to be around and find more passion in life and in your relationships. By contrast, most of us let ourselves get in the habit of energy poor states, lousy states of mind. And when that happens, our minds feel sluggish, and even little problems can trigger great frustration, anger, worry, or fear. Krishnaji shared with me how invaluable it had been to learn these tools to change your state quickly, which he'd learned in my seminars. And we don't just talk about it, by the way, in the seminars. We train ourselves to trigger it so it becomes a reflex. But then Krishnaji asked me a question. He said, "Tony, you know how you talk about peak states or energy-rich states? What if we called those beautiful states? Beautiful states would include any high energy state like love, joy, happiness, appreciation, gratitude, playfulness, fun." I said, "That all works. They're all high energy states." And then he said, "Well, what if we took all those low energy states and called them suffering?" I paused for a moment, smiled. I could see where he was going with this. These low energy states would include frustration, anger, sadness, loneliness, depression, fear, worry. For a moment, I paused. I didn't like the idea of suffering. I pride myself, as you probably do, on being an achiever. We don't just sit around and suffer. When things don't work, we fix them. We turn things around, right? But I smiled to myself. Achievers don't even get fearful, do we? No, we just get stressed. Stress is the achiever word for fear. I finally saw where he was going. Yes, I do get frustrated and stressed at times. So by that definition, I suffered, and I didn't like that idea, which was really good because it gave me a different standard for thinking about this. It's easy to say, well, everybody gets frustrated, angry, sad, worried, and that would be true. But you and I are not everybody. You wouldn't be listening to me still 20 hours later in this book unless you were a rather unique creature who would not settle for an average life. We want a greater quality of life, don't we? What if we disciplined our minds to live in a beautiful state every day, no matter what? I asked him, "Where are you going with this?" He replied, "It's really simple. I've decided I have a spiritual vision for my life." I said, "What is it?" He said, "I want to live a certain way every day. I'm committed to living in a beautiful state no matter what happens. That's my vision. Even if it rains on my parade, even if there's injustice, even if things are unfair, even if I was disappointed," he continued. "Tony, you always talk about disciplining your disappointment, and that's what I'm talking about." I said, "You know what? That's beautiful. If you live that way every day, it's not to say you wouldn't feel these other feelings. You just wouldn't stay there. You'd snap yourself out of it." By consciously choosing and committing to live in a beautiful state, my friend believed that he could not only enjoy so much more of his life, but also give so much more to his wife, his child, and to the world at large. I turned to him and said, "That is a brilliant spiritual vision, and now I'm going to steal it." He laughed and said, "That's okay. I've stolen a lot of your stuff too," with a big smile. Think about it. What would your life be like if you could commit, no matter what happened, including inevitable injustices, challenges, disappointments, and frustrations? What if you didn't stay in those states, but immediately held yourself to a standard that the greatest gift in my life is staying in a beautiful state? And it's a gift I get to give those I love. You know, I used to convince myself that when I got angry or frustrated or upset, my mind gets faster and I solve problems quicker. And that's true. But I just realized that when I'm in a beautiful state of mind, I can solve problems even faster too. And I enjoy my life more, and I'm much more enjoyable to be around for the people I love. I realize it's so true that a beautiful state could change it all. We miss so much of life by reacting to what happens in front of us, and life is too short to suffer. Do you agree? The challenge, though, is that many people believe that someday, somehow, someone or something, and then I'll be happy. But I found that that road to someday often leads to a town called nowhere. Even if something happens in the moment that makes you happy, will it last? Not if you'll be unhappy the minute things don't go your way. Let me give you an example. Have you ever achieved a goal that you've worked your tail off on for years to achieve and you finally got it and said, "Is this all there is?" That's almost worse than failing. If we fail as achievers, most of us pick ourselves up and keep trying and push until we get there. But if you succeed and you're still unhappy, that's what I call technically screwed. Maybe there's a time in your life when you succeeded and you were genuinely happy about it. Can you think of one right now? How you worked on something for a long time, and then you finally achieved it and you felt those feelings of fulfillment? How long did that feeling of fulfillment last? 5 years? 1 year? 6 months? 6 weeks? 6 days? 6 hours? When I ask this at my seminars, 90% of the people are in the 6 hours to 6 weeks category. Why? Because we're not meant to sit at the table of success for too long. We'll get fat and bored. Everything in the universe is beholden to two fundamental truths. Everything in the universe either grows or it dies. And everything in the universe either contributes or it's eliminated by evolution. These aren't my laws. They're universal truths. Would you agree? The most important decision, to live in a beautiful state. The most important decision that you and I can make is to decide that life is too short to suffer and that you're going to appreciate and enjoy this gift of life no matter what happens in the moment. There's simply too much beauty we're missing because we're so caught up in our minds instead of our hearts, our souls, and our spirit. So many people become obsessed with what they're getting or not getting, and when they don't get what they want, they get upset. I began to realize in my own life that my happiness was pretty cheap. With more than 100 companies, thousands of employees on multiple continents, what do you think the odds are that right now, somewhere, someone in the world is screwing up? Well, if my definition of screwing up is doing something different than I think they should, it's probably 100% that it's happening right now somewhere. By the way, what I think is incorrect behavior might actually be a breakthrough way to success that we've never tried before. But all of us have our expectations, don't we? So think about it. If the only time you're going to be happy is when everyone is acting the way you want them to act, whether it's your kids, your spouse, your coworkers, or even yourself, it's going to be pretty hard to stay in a beautiful, happy, and fulfilled state. If you're not careful, it'd be easy to turn into one of those people who spend all their time on social media attacking people who say or do things they don't like. What an illusion. Life does not adapt to us. It's our job to adapt to life. Part of the beauty of humanity is diversity. If you don't know what the universe or God or whatever you believe wants, go to the forest and you'll see it. Every tree, every leaf, every animal, even every snowflake is different. We have certain things in common, but it's the differences, the diversity that makes life rich. So my friend's advice was brilliant. Here it is. Decide to live in a beautiful state no matter what happens around you. It simply means to find the beauty, to find something to be grateful for, to find something to appreciate, and then solve the problem. Think about it. What's more rare than a billionaire? Someone who truly lives in a beautiful state every day, even when things don't go their way, even when things are unjust. When I interviewed more than 50 of the most successful billionaire titans of finance on earth for my book, Money Master the Game, there were only a handful that appeared to be truly consistently happy. I don't mean fake happy. I mean lived in a state of gratitude, appreciation, and were able to find meaning in their problems and challenges. So I made a decision that changed my life. I decided that it wasn't enough to achieve or be fulfilled when things worked out. I decided I'm going to live in a beautiful state every day no matter what. And it's a mental discipline. It's a daily practice that's far from perfect. But it's an incredible standard to hold yourself to, and its rewards are more than I could ever describe in words. It means that regardless of what happens, your life will have meaning because you'll find the beauty and make it what you want it to be. Quote, most people are as happy as they make up their minds to be. Abraham Lincoln. It doesn't matter what problem strikes us. If we buy into the belief that life is always happening for us and not to us, then it's our responsibility to find the good, and we usually can. Can you think of something that happened to your life that was terrible, that you'd never want to go through it again? You never want anybody you care about to go through something like that, but when you look back on it, you see a higher purpose? Going through it made you stronger, now you realize it, or more compassionate, or made you care more, or made you come up with solutions that now allow you to succeed at a higher level. Can you relate? So why wait? Why not decide that everything has a higher purpose? What would your life be like if you lived in a beautiful state every day? It all starts with a decision that you can make today, right now, before you leave this book, that no matter what happens, you're going to find a way to stay in a beautiful state of mind, not because things are going your way or everyone is behaving the way you think they should, but because you can snap out of those negative states in moments and find the good in anything. You can solve any problem that needs to be solved. Keep growing and keep giving. Trade your expectations for appreciation. So as we come to the end of our journey together and the beginning of your next journey, consider this. There are a few decisions in your life that shape you most powerfully. Whom you love and spend time with is certainly one of them. But how you decide you're going to live and be every single day, I would argue, is the most important decision. It'll affect all those you love. Most people suffer all the time because their expectations aren't met. And by the way, technology has made us more and more impatient, hasn't it? Our phones are tools for instant answers and immediate gratification. We ask Google, we search online, and we quickly get what we want. Have you ever seen someone holding up their phone, poking it with their fingers aggressively because a text or a website isn't coming through quick enough? You might want to yell at them, give it a minute, it's going to a satellite and back, for goodness sake. For the last 30 years, up until the pandemic, I used to fly back and forth between America and Australia several times a year. Nowadays, I'm privileged to have my own plane, which is a bit like having a high-speed office in the sky. For better or worse, there's no need to ever disconnect from work. But I vividly remember the dread I used to experience when I'd sit down on a commercial flight to Australia and wonder, how could I possibly live without connecting to emails and texts for the next 14 hours? Plus, when I landed, I'd have a whole another day's worth of work still waiting ahead of me on top of all the things that could have been done during those 14 hours. Then one magical day, I was sitting on a Qantas Airways flight to Sydney, Australia, when a captain proudly announced that the plane had international internet access. All around me, people started cheering, clapping, high-fiving one another, as if God had descended from on high and entered the plane. I didn't stand up and do a jig, but I have to confess, in my mind, I was clapping too. People all over the plane whipped out their iPhones, iPads, laptops, and began to respond to their emails, texts, Slacks, and social media. But then, what do you think happened? Just 9 minutes later, all the giddy delight disappeared. What happened? You guessed it, we lost internet access. For how long? For the entire rest of the flight. It's probably still not working for all these years. So how do you think the passengers reacted to this disappointment? We were crushed. One minute we were euphoric, the next minute people were cursing the airline and the terrible technology. Here's what amazed me most. How quickly our perspective had changed. 9 minutes earlier, it was a miracle. Now it was already an expectation. All we could think about was that the airline had violated our inalienable rights to internet access, a right that hadn't existed until that very day. In our outrage, we instantly lost sight of the wonder that we were flying through the air like a bird, crossing the globe in a matter of hours, watching movies, or sleeping as we flew. Why? Because it had become an expectation. Expectations are what destroy happiness. Whether it's in our relationships, with our kids, or with our work, expectations are why so many people are so unhappy today, even in a world with so much abundance. They're also why we have so many intolerances in the world, because we expect everyone to be, think, act, and behave the way we want them to. How do we overcome this? Here's my advice. Trade your expectations for appreciation, and in that moment, your whole life will change. I'm going to say that again. Trade your expectations for appreciation, and in that moment, your whole life will change. Think about it this way. If you ask someone, how's your day today? There are three primary patterns of response. Oh, it's really good. Why? Because the day went the way they wanted it to go. Or two, it was incredible. One of the greatest days of my life because things went better than they expected. Or it's a terrible day. And you guessed it. Why? Because things didn't turn out the way they hoped for or anticipated or expected. All three of these responses are based on expectations. Again, if your day meets your expectations, it's a good day. If it was better than expected, you're over the moon. If it's worse than you expected, it's a terrible day. If you stick with these patterns, your life will be an emotional roller coaster, completely controlled by the outside world. If our happiness is so weak that it requires the world to meet our expectations, then most people aren't going to stay happy very long, and they're going to miss out on this extraordinary quality of life they desire and deserve. What's the alternative? To find a way to appreciate whatever life gives you. It doesn't mean that you have to settle for whatever comes. If you don't like the status quo, appreciate what you do have and find a way to use it to create something greater. This requires you to believe something simple, that whatever happens, including the toughest challenges and problems, it's meant to serve a purpose. And it's our responsibility to find the higher purpose and use it. I encourage you right now, first make this decision right now for yourself. Decide you're going to find something to appreciate, something to love, something to be grateful for, no matter what happens. And then second, take a moment and write a note to yourself about why you want to live in a beautiful state no matter what. Why life is too short to suffer. Why wait for some day to feel good when the journey is what makes life beautiful? Maybe send this letter to someone you respect, someone who can hold you accountable. And finally, third, when you do find yourself in a state of suffering, use what I call my 90-second rule. When I start to feel stress, when I feel that tension entering my body, like it's starting to get the better of me, I invoke my 90-second rule. I take in a slow, full breath, and then I exhale it completely and just let go of the emotion. I allow myself 90 seconds to feel whatever negative emotion has surfaced and let it go. And then I follow with 90 additional seconds to focus on what's great about this situation or how the challenge is going to make me grow or to focus on what's beautiful in my life already to put things in balance. It makes me look at the situation in a new way. It leads me to find new answers. And when I acknowledge what's not perfect yet, I ask myself, what do I need to do to make it better? In a beautiful state, the answers flow. In a lousy state, the answers are slow or non-existent. Finally, I focus on what I could appreciate and be grateful for in this moment. Because no matter what's happening, you still have people who love you. You still have the gift of life or breath in your lungs. So I let the fog and the negative emotion just drift away and I replace it consciously with the emotions of resourcefulness, resiliency, and gratitude. I let go of the past and I decide what to do to move forward right now. And guess what? The fog disappears. I've made it like a game and I'm by no means perfect at it. At the beginning, I was good at the small things, but some big ones should have been called the 90-minute or the 90-hour game, I think. But I've gotten better as I practice more. But the more you play, the better you get, and the better your life gets. After all, happiness is a muscle. The more you use it, the stronger it gets. And finding gratitude and appreciation starts to come naturally once you make it a pattern, and it's the one that'll transform your life. Think about it. Most people have a highway to stress and a dirt road to happiness. If you develop this new habit, you'll reverse that. You'll build a highway to happiness and a dirt road to pain. Are you up for this game in your life? Would you be willing to do this for 10 days and just try it out, or ideally even 21 days to develop a true habit? Are you ready to make this decision today before we finish this book? Not only to make yourself healthier, but to find a way to embrace whatever life gives you and find something beautiful about it. You can live a life filled with fear, frustration, anger, and sadness, or you can direct those emotions to drive you to find better answers and appreciate everything in your life along the way. I'm not saying it's an easy approach, which is why most people won't do it. But it's incredibly effective and powerful for those who do. Three powerful tools to live in a beautiful state. If you want to live in a beautiful state, we have to be realistic that there will be things that will trigger us. We'll often find ourselves getting triggered by past experiences or pain or challenges and go into our survival brain when we start to overreact to things with frustration or fear or anger or sadness or some combination of emotions that disempower us. There are so many great tools that I teach at my events, but I want to mention three here that you might find useful and impactful. Tool number one, energy medicine, a scientific antidote to stress. The first is a tool that works with people even with extreme trauma. You may have heard of energy medicine or EFT, emotional freedom techniques, also known as tapping. It combines ancient Chinese acupressure with modern psychology. It involves lightly tapping on the endpoints of the meridians in your body, such as your chin or your eyebrow or collarbone. At the same time, you're reciting specific meditations that acknowledge your emotions and release them. Oftentimes, if you think you're over something, the emotion or the energy is still kind of trapped in your body, so it's easy to get triggered again. While this tool has been around for decades, it's only lately that we've gotten some rock-solid science to confirm its ability to lower stress levels, quiet the mind for sleep, improve focus and productivity, and strengthen our immune systems. In a study published by the American Psychological Association, subjects who tapped for an hour showed a 43% decrease in salivary cortisol, your stress hormone. In fact, more than 125 studies have found that tapping can effectively treat conditions ranging from anxiety and depression to traumatic stress and chronic muscle pain. EFT can even subdue people's cravings for carbohydrates and fast food. I have a dear friend named Nick Ortner, whom I taught this technique more than 20 years ago, and he's since gone on to become one of the foremost experts in the field. So we partnered together in the past to help survivors of extreme trauma, including families at the Sandy Hook shooting and the Batman shooting in Aurora, Colorado. We've even built an app together. So to experience this transformative technique for yourself, you can download the app for free or get a special discount on the premium version by visiting thetappingsolution.com/Tony, thetappingsolution.com/Tony. My portion of the company's profits are all donated to Feeding America so that while you're making yourself feel better, you'll actually help someone else in need And you can do the free version and get the results as well. Tool number two, priming, wiring yourself for a peak state. The second tool is something I do every single day to start my morning. It's called priming. I won't try to explain it here, but it's a 10-minute process to supercharge your mind and emotions before you begin your day. I made it 10 minutes, so there's no reason not to do this. If you don't have 10 minutes, you don't have a life. Don't you agree? So if you'd like to see how this tool works, you're welcome to go to TonyRobbins.com/priming. TonyRobbins.com/priming. It's totally free. I also have a version of this on our tapping app that I mentioned above. Tool number three, incredible solutions for those suffering from extreme anxiety or PTSD. For years after his discharge from the U.S. Air Force, Evan Moon was in a fight or flight mode from morning till night. His heart rate was constantly elevated. He was jumpy and easily startled as if something terrible could happen at any time. As his self-confidence crashed through the floor, he avoided seeing friends. Eric couldn't stop thinking about his experiences in Afghanistan. Even his dreams were haunted by the trauma of seeing lives of his fellow airmen who had perished in battle. To ease his pain, Eric became dependent on alcohol, and as he wrote to me, quote, "I lost interest in most things. Everything seemed bland. The best way I could describe the way I was feeling was that every day seemed like I was waking up inside a jar of molasses. Even though I may have had moments of escaping the jar, the stickiness never truly washed off." Did you know that 22 U.S. military veterans commit suicide every day? Many are combat veterans who served in Iraq, Afghanistan, or Vietnam and came back with post-traumatic stress disorder, PTSD. It's a chronic, debilitating, life-wrecking condition and one of the toughest to overcome. The standard approach includes antidepressants, cognitive behavioral therapy to change the patient's thought process, and exposure therapy where people relive the traumatic event that triggered the trauma in the first place. None are ideal. The results are unreliable and they require years of treatment or set off serious side effects or all of the above. I've worked with people like this before. A man who'd lost 32 of his fellow veterans in multiple tours of Iraq and Afghanistan came to one of my events wearing dark glasses. The PTSD was so bad that the light could stimulate it. He was unable to sleep. He had night sweats and he continued for years. It took me 2.5 hours to help him. In fact, he came on CNN and was interviewed and they showed the before and after over a 6-month period. It was extraordinary. While I knew I could help, the challenge is that with 22 veterans committing suicide every day, I needed to find a scalable solution. The good news is that there's a new and promising therapy for PTSD, simple, safe, and fast-acting injections that have been used effectively for years to relieve nerve pain or circulation problems. In a recent controlled study at 3 U.S. military hospitals, 100 active duty personnel received a pair of shots 2 weeks apart in their stellate ganglion, the nerve tissue on either side of your voice box that connects to the amygdala, the fight or flight center of the brain. What's amazing is it's an outpatient procedure. It's just 2 shots a week apart or 2 weeks apart with virtually no side effects aside from some temporary hoarseness. 8 weeks later, the troops who got the actual block showed twice as much impact as those who received a sham placebo treatment. They had relief from depression, distress, anxiety, and pain and showed marked progress in their physical and mental functioning. The method had an 85% success rate, which beats many standard care drugs. I committed to sponsor 150 veterans through this program, and one of them was Evan Moon. Here's what he wrote to me about what he calls the miracle treatment. Quote, "I'm writing you, Mr. Robbins, to let you know that after the shot, everything has changed. Colors are brighter, my nightmares are gone, and life seems so hopeful. I feel as if I'm bathing in a warm ocean throughout the day of peace and joy. Going into social situations feels like a breeze, and I love being around new people and learning more about them. Most importantly, I find myself laughing like a child and smiling throughout my day. I feel present and in the moment. Right after the shot, I was able to go back and spend time with my children and my wife. It feels like a different world. This is only the beginning, and I'm thrilled to see what happens next." End quote. He wrote me again a year later to tell me how well he was doing, and that he was helping other veterans get the help they need through this treatment. Scientists agree that more long-term studies of this therapy are needed, but thus far, it's safe to say that stellate ganglion block gives anyone damaged by trauma new hope for a compelling future and for a rich and beautiful life. If you know someone in need, this is something worth searching out. To learn more, please visit thestellateinstitute.com. That's stellate, S-T-E-L-L-A-T-E, institute.com. The ultimate path to freedom. Quote, as I walked out the door toward the gate that would lead to my freedom, I knew if I didn't leave my bitterness and hatred behind, I'd still be in prison, end quote. Nelson Mandela, South African freedom fighter. I know that staying in a beautiful state can sound like an impossible task, especially when we're going through challenging times. So to finish up, let me give you three examples of people who've experienced a level of injustice and pain that would have easily justified their staying angry, sad, or even enraged. But these three individuals instead chose to live in a beautiful state, to find the good in everything, and to find a way to use what life gave them to grow and to serve. Victimhood was not for them, so as a result, they transformed themselves and touched people all over the world. First, I had the privilege of meeting Nelson Mandela in the early 1990s, not long after he finally was released from 27 years in South African jails and became the president of his country. Having a moment to be with this legend, I wanted to understand how he made it through such challenging times. So I asked him, how'd you survive all that time under such miserable conditions in this dank, tiny cell with only a straw mat for a bed? Boy, it was the wrong question to ask. President Mandela literally rose up from his chair and glared at me as he got up and said, I didn't survive. I prepared. That led to a walk and a conversation that I'll never forget. He told me that when he was in jail, he understood that his life could lead in one of two directions, and that either path was filled with purpose if he chose it. He might die in prison, which would spark a revolution that he thought would change his country for the better. Or he might live, which meant he'd need to let go of his pain and prepare to lead South Africa forward, not just black people, but the entire country. So Mandela taught himself Afrikaans, the language spoken by his white jailers. He wanted to be able to speak to the people of South Africa in their own language so they could feel the truth in his voice. In the midst of all his pain he endured, he found a beautiful state in radical forgiveness. Quote, I figured I might as well enjoy the guards, he told me. I might as well enjoy the day. What an amazing capacity for appreciation. What a beautiful state to live in. And Mandela rose above his own plight and focused instead on how to serve others and something greater than himself. And the changes he brought to the country under his leadership were transformative. Now, as a second example, you don't have to be a world-famous icon to decide to enjoy your life no matter what. Sam Burns was only 17 years old when he told a TED Talk audience, quote, I have a very happy life. I don't waste energy feeling bad for myself. I surround myself with people I want to be with, and I keep moving forward, end quote. What makes Sam's outlook remarkable is that he was born with progeria, a rare genetic disease that speeds aging by a factor of 8. Progeria stunts children's growth and makes them biologically old before their time, which is why they often call it the Benjamin Button disease. Starting the first few years of life, it quickly leads to a slew of maladies associated with old age, like stiff joints, vision challenges, hearing loss, kidney failure, and arteriosclerosis. On average, these children die of a heart attack or a stroke, usually by the age of 13. Against these scary odds, Sam Burns faced the next day without fear or dread. He didn't squander his energy worrying. He saved it for living. He was a straight-A student at Massachusetts High School, an aspiring cell biologist, a stand-up percussionist with a marching band. After he met and befriended Francis Collins, the head of the National Institutes of Health, Sam's unquenchable spirit inspired research that led to a groundbreaking discovery. Progeria was triggered by a single devastating typo in the DNA code. That one mutation floods the body with progerin, a toxic protein that weakens cell nuclei. In 2012, a clinical trial by Leslie's team found a cancer drug that slowed the onslaught of progeria and extended Sam's life. Their continuing research, adding a second drug, a form of rapamycin, has given the world new insights about cardiovascular disease and the aging process. Sam offered one last piece of advice at his TED Talk. Quote, never miss a party if you can help it. He was thrilled to share his personal philosophy on an international platform, but what he really looked forward to was the school's homecoming dance the next night. Whenever fun was on the agenda, Sam was first in line. Sam died a month later, way too soon, but not before showing us the way to a magnificent, extraordinary, meaningful life. He weighed just 50 pounds, but he left a legacy of living in a beautiful state the size of a mountain. His TED Talks had more than 33 million views on YouTube. Sam refused to let anything spoil the glorious gift of every day on earth. He was unshakably committed to live each hour to the utmost. He kept moving forward no matter what. If Sam can do it, can't you and I? Not long ago, I'll give you my third example. I was lucky enough to meet Sam's kindred spirit, a woman named Alice Hertz Summer. I interviewed Alice when she was 107 years old, nearly 70 years after the Nazis murdered her mother and put her and her son in a concentration camp. Alice was a famous concert pianist in Europe, and she was forced to play in this inmate orchestra. She was told that if she didn't look happy, if she didn't play well, they'd murder her son in front of her. The Nazis actually made films of her playing to try to convince the rest of the world they were treating Jews well. But in real life, the conditions were beyond brutal. Alice slept on a frozen dirt floor and channeled all her energy to trying to keep her son happy, even though they had little to eat. Yet, Alice refused to let the pain become her story. She gave more than 100 concerts, and while she was forced to entertain the Nazis, something beautiful happened. The music echoed through the yard into the barracks where the prisoners who were sick and hungry were fed by the sounds. When Alice was playing, many of them said it was like God was present. The music was an extension of life's beauty in the middle of the most painful situation. Alice told me the prisoners would yearn to listen to it and feel their spirits lifted out of suffering. It was as if someone had transported them out of the hell of the camp and into the heaven of life's most beautiful moments. By serving others, Alice did more than survive the Nazis. She found a way to appreciate and enjoy her existence. Years later, she wrote a book I highly recommend. The title is A Garden of Eden in Hell, The Life of Alice Hertz Summer. It's a book I can't recommend enough, but during our interview, I have to say I was struck by how everything was so beautiful to Alice. She was living on her own at 107 years old, still swimming and playing the piano. People in the building would listen to her play just as they had the camp 7 decades earlier. Alice was grateful for everything. She talked about how beautiful life is, how grateful she was that her son made it through that time, how beautiful it was that she survived cancer at 80 and was now 107. She even remarked how beautiful the microphone was, as well as my wife. Life is beautiful if we just look for the beauty regardless of the external triggers. One final lesson. So hopefully this reminds you to get rid of the illusion that so many of us have, that if life was just a certain way, then we'd be happy. Let me give you one last powerful example. When I travel around the world and ask people, what's the best thing that could ever happen to them in life? The most common answer I hear is winning the lottery. And if you ask people, what's the worst thing that could happen? Many might say to become a paraplegic. But in a famous study of dozens of major lottery winners and people that paralyzed in accidents, which group would you guess was happier 3 years later, the lottery winners or the paraplegics? My bet is that you're thinking it must be the paraplegics, but you'd be wrong. So now you'll tell me the lucky lottery winners were the happy ones, and you'd still be wrong. In fact, the lottery winners were no happier overall than a control group who hadn't won a dime. Sure, they had more money, but they also had people constantly demanding and expecting things from them. And the paraplegics? They rated their happiness above the midpoint on a 0 to 5 scale. After you're in a terrible accident, your mindset changes, if you don't use drugs too much, that is. If you relearn to move your fingers, it's like a miracle, a reason for joy. You take nothing for granted. When we find a larger meaning in our lives, we heal mentally, emotionally, and spiritually. And that is the ultimate gift. The ultimate gift. Quote, live life fully while you're here. Experience everything. Take care of yourself and your friends. Have fun. Be crazy. Be weird. Get out and screw up. You're going to anyway. You might as well enjoy the process. Tony Robbins. I know this guy. Well, we've covered a lot of ground and a lot of tools in these 700 plus pages. I hope this book can serve as a field manual, an ultimate resource to enhance your health span. A book you can return to anytime you face a real challenge. But before we turn the final page, I hope you really take a moment to commit to live in a beautiful state no matter what happens. Remember, a beautiful state isn't perfect. It's better than perfect. It's messy. It's playful. It's full of fun. It's being generous with yourself and others and not taking yourself too seriously. It's working to keep getting better, to foster a life filled with more joy and happiness and meaning. It's finding something or someone you want to serve more than yourself, because that's the true meaning of grace. A life well lived, a life of service, a life filled with love. Finally, will you remember the creative power of your mind and emotions, and that you're one decision away from changing anything in your life? If you don't like your body, change it. If you don't like your business or career, change it. If you don't like your relationships, change yourself first, then change the relationship. Remember, all actions are fathered or mothered by a decision. This chapter is about to end, but at the end of this program, there's the opportunity for you to make some decisions about what you've learned. I've broken it into a 7-step potential action plan that includes deciding what you want from your body, your emotions, and your life, and getting clear about where you are. The second step is to educate yourself and keep learning about the cutting-edge tools that can increase your energy, your strength, and vitality, and hopefully extend both the length and the quality of your life. This book has been filled with so many tools, but which ones will you use? And third, you need to look at your lifestyle. After going through the 7 steps in a moment, you'll have an action plan. In the end, the information is not what changes your life. Action is. You don't need to do everything in this book. Just pick a few things you're going to follow through on. Commit to do them immediately. I've always taught that the key to momentum is never leave the sight of a decision without doing something in that moment that commits you to follow through. Make a phone call, send a text or an email, schedule a meeting, but get the ball moving because your life is going to get your attention. But if you do this while you're in state, you'll follow through. And finally, remember these 3 decisions that you're making each day and choose well. Decide what you're going to focus on. Don't let the environment do it, because what you focus on determines your experience of life. Decide what things mean and find the empowering meaning, not the one everyone else offers. And decide what you're going to do. Do something that'll serve not only yourself but others, because what you do is going to determine your results. Remember, it's in those moments of decision that your destiny is shaped. So please, choose now and choose well. You know, when I began writing this book, I envisioned you hearing these final words because I knew it mean that you had listened to many other pages in this book containing answers that you may have needed for yourself or others in the future. And I want to thank you for taking this journey with me, for having such perseverance, for the gift of your time and your attention. They are 2 of the most valuable things you can share with anyone. I didn't take them lightly. It's truly my heartfelt prayer that this book has touched not just your head, but your heart as well. And that as the result, you'll take even better care of yourself and those you love. Perhaps you'll get those tests in advance or make a list of things in this book that are worth making new habits out of, so that when the challenging times come, you're already prepared. If this book has helped you to find less fear and more joy to heal and move forward, then our time together was well spent. So now the real journey begins. I also hope I have the privilege to meet you someday and that you can tell me the insights that you pulled from this book that have helped you and those you love. So until we meet again, until our paths cross, I wish for you a long, healthy, passion-filled life with many blessings to you and your family. With love and respect, Tony Robbins. Well, I said goodbye, but I'm back. I want to make sure you come up with a 7-step action plan for lasting results. I'm going to walk you through it only just for a moment or two here. And by the way, you listened to this audio program, but if you had the physical one, there's 354 references. Everything we've talked about, I want you to know, is referenced in this book. So if you need that, you can find it in the written version. I'm certainly not going to go read all of those. But let's look at these 7 steps. So now that we've gone on this extraordinary journey and you've been exposed to these incredible tools for strength and healing and vitality and longevity, you know, you don't want to let your learning lead only to knowledge. My original teacher, Jim Rohn, used to say, let your learning lead to action and you'll create an extraordinary life. Let it lead to knowledge and you'll become a fool. So to simplify these 700 pages, let's look at 7 steps that you can take to create a simple, quick action plan for the things you want to follow through on and transform your life while it's still fresh inside you. Remember, always consult your doctor so that they can help determine what actions are best for you, and hopefully your doctor is an expert in these areas. So step 1, decide and get the information you need. So first, decide what you truly want for your life physically. What's the result you're truly after? Do you want more energy? Do you want more vitality? Do you want more strength? Do you want more flexibility? Do you want to start to rejuvenate your body, revitalize it, bring more youth to it? You know, the first step is get clear what you want. And then the more clear you're about what you want, the easier it is to figure out how to use all these tools that are in here. Step 2, get the information you need. Get yourself tested so you can maximize your energy by knowing whether there are toxic metals in your system that are getting in the way of your well-being. This is critical. As I shared with you, You know, I've dealt with these toxic metals, and about one out of every three of my friends that get tested find them in there. If you can find them early on, it's easy to get out. You got to know. Also, you want to test your hormones. Are they in balance? And more importantly, are they optimized to give you the giant difference in how you can feel day to day? This is huge. And then ideally, do the things that'll give you peace of mind for yourself and for your family. Get the Grail test plus a full body MRI so you can know that there's nothing to be concerned about with cancer. Grail can even be done in your home with a simple blood test. If it's appropriate, I'd consider scheduling a CCTA test so you know exactly where your cardiovascular health is and what needs to be done to stay strong and healthy for years to come. Consider getting the Alzheimer's test so that you know if you're genetically predisposed, and also so you can come up with a lifestyle plan that'll reduce your risk. If you do this far enough in advance, there's a variety of tools in this book that can make a difference. Who's in your family or your friendship base whom you'd like to also make sure gets tested to look out for their well-being and help them maximize their quality of life? And last, if you want to have some fun, you can discover what your true age is. As I mentioned earlier, I was thrilled to discover that my chronological age, of course, is 62. That I knew. But only 51 biologically. And now I'm doing new things to try and bring that number down even more. I think you might be surprised by the number. And if it's not where you want it to be, there's so many things within these pages that can get you to change it. So if you know what you really want for your body and you know what you need to go get, you know, the tests and so forth. Now let's go to step two. Review your education. If you read this book or listened to it, congratulations. You've given yourself a tremendous education. But the knowledge isn't power. It's potential power. Decide what tools you want to access today. And what do you want to keep track of for the future? So, for example, are stem cells something you want to pursue for some aspect of your life or someone in your family? Do you want to implement Dr. Sinclair's four vitality ingredients to help reverse biological aging or tap into the energy force of NMN? Or there's some technologies that you want to keep track of so when you need them, they're there, perhaps learning more about the Wnt pathway and osteoarthritis. Or is there anyone in your family or people whom you know who want to share information with about what you've learned here? About the big six like heart disease, diabetes, obesity, stroke, cancer, autoimmune, or Alzheimer's? Are you going to keep track of gene therapy and CRISPR, some of the transformations they're creating that might be helpful to you or someone you love? Do you know anyone with Parkinson's or severe addiction who could feel relief from focused ultrasound? We talked about incisionless brain surgery. Make a list of the things you want to act on and things you want to keep track of so that if you or anyone you know about needs help, you'll have the answers you can share with them and they can consider these with their doctor. Just create a little checklist for yourself. This book is here. It's an ultimate resource guide you can go back to again and again anytime you need it. Step three, maximize your energy and regeneration. Consider what aspects of the chapter on Vitality Pharmacy, that was chapter 10, that might help you accelerate your energy or your strength or your vitality or help you to recover from challenges you may be facing. For example, are you going to expand your capacity by optimizing your hormones through hormone optimization therapy? Would peptides do something you may want to consider? Are there any peptides you'd like to look into that make a difference in anything for your immune system to sexual drive? What are the pharmaceutical-grade supplements you might want to have to start your day with energy or get yourself to sleep at night without side effects? Or would you like to tap into NAD3 or NMN-like products to maximize your energy and vitality? Step four. Create a plan for sleep and living pain-free. Remember, the third pillar of health, besides diet and exercise, is sleep. And it profoundly affects how your diet gets processed or whether you even feel like exercising. So what's your plan? Can you schedule 7 hours and track your sleep with an AI device? Will you make some changes that'll make it easier for you to get deep and restful sleep so you feel vital? And if there's pain in your body or in someone you love, which of the tools in the pain-free chapter do you want to use? PMF, Pete Egoscue's techniques, counterstrain, relief treatment to free up your tissues and nerves? Are you going to do things that support your back, like the back arch? Step five, devise your maximum longevity lifestyle. What are 3 to 5 things that you might want to commit to? You're not going to do them all, so what are the things that you think can make the biggest difference? Is eating more live foods and reducing your sugar, or perhaps going on a 10-day cleanse to break the pattern of sugar in your body and reset the system? Would you cut just 300 calories from your food intake, a bagel a day, and see a significant change? Would you want to implement one of the new FDA tools like Plenity to curb your appetite, or Wegovy to shut off the hormone that creates hunger? If you have pre-diabetes or diabetes or know someone who does, what do you want to use out of that chapter to make changes so that you don't have to live with it anymore, or they don't have to? You could even decide to cut back on caffeine and increase your water intake to half your body weight in ounces a day and massively increase your hydration and your energy. Are you going to practice some breathing patterns to help you relax and move your lymph, like the breathing pattern we taught, 1-4-2, 8-32-16, inhale 8, hold 32, exhale 16, or whatever number matches your capacity? Will you change your food environment so you're not triggered by negative foods, instead putting fresh foods near you as opposed to all the packaged processed stuff? Will you tap into the power of heat or cold through the sauna or through the cold, that healthy shock that'll protect you from disease and health span? If you didn't read that section, go back and read it. It'll blow your mind. It's in a box in that chapter. This is all about designing your lifestyle in a way that's most fulfilling to you and gives you the greatest quality of life. Step 6. Movement is life. What's your fitness plan? Given that exercise can reduce your risk of cancer by 40%, cut your risk of stroke by 45%, and slash your risk of diabetes by 50%, will you just work out 10 minutes a week with something like OsteoStrong? Will you create a fitness plan with Billy Beck III? It's free. Or just get yourself on a plan of some sort to start and move yourself forward. Or do you want to make exercise fun through VR by playing through Black Box or one of the other tools or devices that make working out like a game? And finally, step 7, take control of your mind. Will you create a daily practice for just 10 minutes a day through priming? Remember, you can visit tonyrobbins.com/priming, supercharge your day, cost you nothing, and put yourself in the right place to begin your day. Do you want to utilize the power of the emotional freedom techniques or tapping? Visit thetappingmethod.com/Tony and download the app for free and receive the tools that can turn you around. Do you know somebody who has severe anxiety or PTSD that you can pass along the information on the injection that's used with great success for vets? And most importantly, will you become aware and not let fear take you over, knowing that your mind can make you sick or healthy, frustrated or happy? Will you commit to the decision of living in a beautiful state no matter what, even when things don't go your way? Will you invoke that 90-second rule like a game to see how fast you can turn yourself around and experience the freedom you deserve? Wrap up. Whatever you decide to do, these 7 steps are just a simple way to try to chunk so much of the information you learned here. Again, you don't need to do everything in this book, but my hope is that you use it as a guidebook, that you can come back to it for answers for the rest of your life, for yourself and for your family. We'll keep updating any new information on our website at lifeforce.com as we bring you new information as it comes. So to wrap up, please pick a few things in each of these areas and decide, what are you going to do? What are you going to take action on? What are you going to make into a habit? And maybe who are you going to help? Then just keep expanding your education in these areas as they continue to develop, because the knowledge you learn could change a life and in some cases, even save a life. Those are your 7 steps. Thank you for your time and your energy. Again, I look forward to hopefully meeting you someday and hearing of the impact of what you've done for yourself and for those you love. Blessings to you.
Life Force. How new breakthroughs in precision medicine can transform the quality of your life and those you love. Was written by Tony Robbins and Peter Diamandis, MD, with Robert Hariri, MD, PhD, and an introduction by Ray Kurzweil, and read by Jeremy Bob, Tony Robbins, Peter H. Diamandis, and Cassandra Campbell. It was recorded by C.J. Shallow, Matthew Wilhelm, and Alberto Vaccarino at JMM Studios in New York City, Max Bell at Beat Street Studios in New York City, Eric Garcia at 48 Windows in Santa Monica, California, and Adam Weiss at Mix One Studios in Boston, Massachusetts. Editing, mix, and post-production by Like 2,000 Pounds. The associate producer was Anna Chan. Life Force was produced and directed by Travis Tung. This has been a presentation of Simon & Schuster Audio. Life Force, how new breakthroughs in precision medicine can transform the quality of your life and those you love, is available in print from Simon & Schuster. Also available from Simon & Schuster Audio, Unleash the Power Within, Personal Coaching to Transform Your Life, written and read by Tony Robbins.